this week on Thingamabob.
If you're interested in starting some biological warfare, just head on down to Georgia.
Stop. So maybe I'm not full of microchips.
Maybe, I don't know. Put your snack down. This is, it's real gross. Stay tuned for more.
Baseball bats and gallon cowboy hats and more. Magic rings and other nerdy things in store. Listen on in, it's time for Thingamabob. Better tune in, it's time for Thingamabob.
Thingamabob!
Well, hello, Josh.
Well, hello, Bree.
Hello to everybody listening.
And welcome to Thingamabob.
This week's theme is vaccines.
Vaccines, baby.
Vaccines.
Get yours in a few months.
Get yours in a few months.
I know I will.
Oh, I definitely will. We have a couple of friends who have been able to get, well, to schedule their vaccines as of today because they're teachers. And my mom got her first shot of the vaccine because she works at a hospital. So,
yeah,
it's rolling out.
I feel like I know a few people that are getting their vaccine. I've seen like social media posts. Yeah, about it.
I do have some like distant friends who are doctors or nurses and work in hospitals and they've been getting them. But I don't know them like very
personally.
Well. Yeah, I do. Well, yeah. I do know them personally because we're Facebook friends, but I don't know them well. It's like summer camp friends from 10 years ago, you know?
Oh, yeah. Very personal. Very personal friends.
I meant I know them, but like, you know, we haven't talked a long time.
Yes. Anyways. Yes, vaccines. I'm loving it.
Well, Joshua.
Yes.
What was your thorn of the week?
I think obviously this week was a very interesting experience in D.C.
It yes.
is January 11th for yes. future listeners.
2021.
2021. The Capitol was invaded by...
terrorists. By domestic terrorists. Yes. Yes, it was.
It was. And it was very interesting to watch. It's so funny. As like an outside viewer, it was like watching a different country in a way.
It was wild watching it unfold.
But we have,
we got like several text messages like, hey, do you guys see what's happening? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And so we turned on the news and it was, it was just bizarre.
Yeah, I cried. I didn't think it was possible. I mean, I know the past however many years have literally nurtured this idea.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw the result of it, but it was still very sad. And interesting to see our Capitol literally invaded and not stopped at all by any of the, this is not my source, but 1,000 Capitol police guards that, you know, they have.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's been a lot of comparisons online between this, not a protest, an actual mob. The Black Lives Matter protests of the summer and how they were met so differently, where Black Lives Matter was peacefully protesting. Any like mobbing or looting activity that we have proven came from people who came outside of the state and came in with the specific intent to undermine the movement and, you know, the voice of what people were calling for, versus this mob where people were very clearly, you know, in support of overthrowing an election and breaking into the Capitol building and possibly attempting to harm members of Congress or the Senate or the vice president. And how the lack of force that was used, like just the comparison between the two is, I say astounding. It shouldn't be astounding at this point in time, but it still kind of is just amazing how they were so quote-unquote unprepared for something like this, and yet they were prepared over the summer, you know?
Yeah, and even more so, too, I think this was an interesting experience because it reminded us, but also maybe opened up some Republicans' eyes that this group of people, you know, Trump supporters specifically, are not interested in anything that they had in mind. It is a separate group of people who are interested and in like anarchy and, you know, don't like the government, whether you're mm-hmm. Democrat or Republican. Mm-hmm. And there were bombs taken into, you know, the Capitol, and they were looking at going into the Senate chamber. Mm-hmm. And so it's like not a party thing anymore. I mean, it hasn't been.
It's all in the name of patriotism.
It's not even patriotism, because like that patriot, like being like a patriot mm-hmm. and patriotism is like this pride. I feel like all of them are pride for Trump and Trump alone.
Yeah, I don't mean the actual definition of patriotism. I mean what these people think patriotism is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, I just honestly have no words, because it is just such a weird experience that we knew was possible.
Oh, yeah.
And we saw it happen.
Yeah. I remember election night in 2016, like crying as results came in and being so upset, because this is kind of what a lot of people were seeing as a possibility of what was going to happen. And people laughed about, you know, like, oh, Democrats, you've lost the election, you're going to go like cry and whine about it. But it's because we saw the hatred that was already there, and we could foresee how much worse it would be.
And cry and whine we did, but we did not storm the Capitol.
No, we did not. We did protest. I did go to the Women's March.
Yes.
But there was no storming of the Capitol that happened.
Nope.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a pretty thorny thorn.
It was an extremely thorny. I'm hurting. I'm in pain right now.
Poking you.
What's your rose of the week, Brianna?
You know, this week was long. My rose of the week, we're going to go with two things. My first rose, while we're on the topic, is seeing all of our domestic terrorists slowly being arrested throughout the week.
Slowly.
That is, I know. I wish it was faster, but we do see the news rolling in of, you know, one by one, people who stupidly didn't cover their faces, but good for us, are very easy to find. And so they've been arresting people who were inciting the mob violence. Anyways, moving on past that. My other rose for the week, which I wasn't going to mention because I don't want to brag, but I did beat Josh at Scrabble this week.
Oh my God. Is that my other thorn of the week?
Yeah.
I had like an interesting Scrabble game, because I think I got the most points in one word and the least points in another word. So I was playing a very inconsistent game.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. You did. You got the most points for a word and the least.
I'm not. I feel like I kept, you know, and we both run into this problem. Mm-hmm. Scrabble is about like playing one side of the board. Yeah. That's just the way it trends.
I know.
And it's so hard to like break into the other side with like little letters, because everything gets so jumbled, and you're kind of, you know, thinking about blocking things for the other person, but mm-hmm. in turn you're blocking things for yourself.
Yeah.
And so then there's no place to play. And there's then you start doing these two letter words because you're stuck and all you have is like A, I, 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 I.
Yeah, we were both pretty frustrated by the end, and I was convinced that you were going to win because you had higher point values than I did at some places. But I think my words were just more consistent as far as points.
I think you beat me by a lot too, right?
I mean, I beat you by like 40 points.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. It was like 300 versus like 240, something like that.
You still played a good game.
Yeah, yeah. I don't need some patronizing.
Anyways,
shit.
Josh, do you have a rose? It's okay.
I don't know. I woke up at 6 a.m. this morning, okay?
I'm not sure
I got a rose.
Oh, okay.
I think that's how my week's going.
Oh, well.
I say this, it's so funny. Whenever we talk about times, and I'm like, I woke up at 6 a.m., like, I think half the people listening to this wake up at 6 a.m.
Probably.
We're like complaining. Oh, I woke up at 6 a.m.
Listen, just because you do it all the time doesn't mean it's not early. It is early.
I know, and sometimes you work late, you know?
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for sharing that.
I'm sorry, guys.
Another thorn.
I have a rose.
Yes.
And it's a plug.
Oh.
We created a new Instagram.
Because
drama, Brianna has been very graciously dealing with the Instagram drama for like months now.
Yeah.
And we finally created a new Instagram because there was literally no other option. So mm-hmm. Thingamabob Podcast is our new handle.
We're back.
We're
baby.
Back. I bet if you look up Thingamabob, you're going to find us pretty easily. But
hopefully.
Thingamabob Podcast is the handle.
Is the full
new
handle.
Instagram. New year, new Instagram, okay?
New year, new Instagram. We spent a couple hours re-uploading all of our content.
A couple. I think it took like half a day.
it took, well, we like broke it into chunks, so it's hard to tell. But if you would like to show us how much you love us, please go back and like all of our old posts, because we had to re-upload. So now there's nothing there. But that would be appreciated.
Yes, asking for likes. We have no shame here on Thingamabob Podcast.
We have no shame. Listen, we're a small business. We're trying to take
small
off.
Small business. We don't make any money.
Please
a free
help
small
us.
Business.
We're poor.
We are poor.
Ooh. Well, Josh, let's jump in.
All right, guys. I'm ready to talk about my vaccine. Okay, listen. I'm a little nervous because I feel like simultaneously I have never done as much research and felt as little prepared.
Because there's a lot to learn.
It's a lot to learn. It's a lot of science that we just don't understand if you don't have like a basis of science. Mm-hmm. So we're reminding everyone that we are talking about history here, not about too much science, but I will get a little science-y.
We're not scientists. We're not professionals, but we're here to just talk to you.
We're here to just talk to you, okay?
Hey, we just want to talk.
This is not Osmosis Jones. It's not easy. It's hard.
I wish it was Osmosis Jones. What a good movie.
I love that movie.
That's like a deep cut. I haven't watched or thought about Osmosis Jones in years.
I only thought about it because I'm going to kind of explain how vaccines work. And I was trying to think of a metaphor.
And Osmosis Jones was it.
I was going to use Osmosis Jones, but it doesn't really make sense because he's took an antibiotic.
Oh, I see.
So it's not, you didn't really take a vaccine.
Well, that's okay. The spirit of Osmosis Jones will be there.
It lives within, okay? He was a white blood cell, and we will talk about white blood cells.
All right, Josh, hit me.
Okay, here's the lay of the land. You know, I'm making this pretty clear. I'm going to do this in three parts. The first part is how vaccines work. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be beneficial for Brianna's too, because we, you know, in order to understand how and why these things were invented, we have to understand how they work. Yeah. The next part will be the history of typhoid fever. Mm-hmm. And the last part is the vaccine that came and saved the day.
Woo-hoo!
Yes. Okay. All right. So first section, here's how vaccines work in a normal day. When a virus or bacteria enters the body, it can enter the bloodstream and multiply, and this is what is called an infection.
This is what is called an infection.
I mean, did you know that was the definition of an infection?
I didn't.
There you go. I didn't, so I knew what an infection is, but I didn't know that as specifically what was the infection.
Right.
The body senses this foreign invasion and sends white blood cells to attack the germ or virus. There are three major type of white blood cells that the body sends. The first one is called a macrophage. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about that on this podcast before. But it is a white blood cell that swallows the germs and then the leftover dead cells that have already died.
Mm-hmm.
The what?
I said delish.
And it leaves behind what is called an antigen, and this is part of the virus. What comes and swallows the antigen is the next blood cell, and it's called a B lymphocyte. This produces antibodies that attack the antigens. Are we following me so far?
I'm following you so far.
The last blood cell, white blood cell, is called a T lymphocyte. And this attacks the blood cells that have already been infected. Now, when you get a vaccine, it introduces an imitation of the virus into your body. And so what this does is it creates T lymphocytes and antibodies that can actually learn this disease, because T lymphocytes are called memory cells. Mm-hmm. So when you get the vaccine, it will remember how the vaccine, like what the makeup of the vaccine, or not the vaccine, makeup of the virus and the vaccine is. And so then it can actually remember how to fight it for when you get the real virus, or if you get the real virus.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're so smart.
It makes sense. You know, bodies are so smart. So that is kind of how it like vaccines work, because then your body's prepared as opposed to it just getting the regular disease and then not knowing how to fight it. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of vaccines are either dead versions of the virus or weakened versions of the virus. Mm-hmm. Or only small parts of the virus. So your body has more time to create these, because it can take days for it to create the white blood cells necessary to fight the infection. So when you're overwhelmed with the full form of the infection, your body can't always fight it.
Right.
And that's how you die.
Nice. Great.
Nice. Now, there are five different types of vaccines, according to the CDC. There's the live attenuated vaccine, which introduces an obviously a live version of the virus, but that version is weakened. Mm-hmm. The next type is the inactivated vaccine, which is an inactive or dead form of the germ. and this is killed during the process of making the vaccine. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, or most of the time, multiple doses of this one are needed because it's dead and it doesn't, your body doesn't really create enough of those white blood cells to fight
sure.
it.
Sure. Yeah, you need multiple rounds.
Multiple rounds. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as we know with certain vaccines. There is a subunit vaccine, which only contains a portion of the virus, as we talked about. And then there's a conjugate vaccine, which is important for young immune systems because some viruses come with a coating of sugar on them that disguises them from the body.
Oh.
And so then when young immune systems have never seen this before,
yeah.
they don't know what that is and don't attack it. So what the conjugate vaccine does is it attaches that to another antigen that the body does know how to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it attacks that and then it learns.
Wow, virus in disguise.
Literally. Transformers. Now, I'm going to call back some of these types a little later.
Okay.
Just so we know. So keep them in your head. I can kind of re-explain it. It's just, you know, it's so science-y. I don't know how else to do it, okay? I can't think of a metaphor for it, but it works. I don't need to say this, but it's kind of important. Get vaccinated.
Yes. Oh, my God. Please.
Some people believe that you, if you get the full disease, your body can learn how to fight it better.
Mm-hmm.
But when there's a chance mm-hmm. of side effects and death when you do that.
Yeah.
Whereas the vaccines have a pretty good percentage of efficacy. And
nice.
Nice. And so it will work.
Yeah. I think both of us will probably present a fair amount of good evidence on why vaccines work today.
Yep.
Yeah.
We are. I think we will. Okay. Now let's talk about one deadly disease.
Oh, no.
This is the history of typhoid fever.
Bum, bum, bum.
Did I even say I was doing typhoid? I think
no,
I did.
No, I don't. Well, maybe. I don't know. I actually don't think you did.
I think when I talked about the parts. It doesn't matter.
Oh, yes.
I'm doing typhoid vaccine, okay?
Okay.
Surprise. Now, typhoid fever is a disease that kills 10 to 30% of people who are untreated
wow.
to this day. Symptoms include fever, obviously, headache, loss of appetite, and fatigue. Some patients can also have a rash, intestinal bleeding, internal swelling, and death. We love
oh,
it.
Oh, God.
We stand.
Oh, it sounds like a blast.
Got a blast. The World Health Organization estimates that there are 20 million cases per year.
Still?
Still.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's gone down.
Oh, my God.
That's how many cases there were before.
Wow.
And 200,000 deaths associated with typhoid fever.
Mm-hmm. For some reason, typhoid fever to me was like an old-timey disease that doesn't happen anymore.
Because it doesn't happen in the United States.
I see.
It happens in other countries.
I see. Okay.
Single mindset here. Before the disease was officially discovered and named, there were a few prominent moments in history when they think that everyone got typhoid fever.
Okay.
One of those was something to do with the way the genetics worked and the way, like, you know, the scribblings of the history showed.
Yes,
anyway,
the scribblings.
One of them was the plague in Athens in 430 BCE that killed 1/3 of the population.
Oh,
they
wow.
thought that was typhoid fever.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Interesting.
Maybe. Who knows?
Ooh, maybe.
Not us.
Not I, said the fly. Those also, another thing that they kind of think throughout history was that wartime and like the military spread typhoid fever and caught typhoid
yeah.
fever from other countries like constantly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, one yeah. of the diseases that kind of plagued the armies,
mm-hmm.
literally. Now, there are also a few things that led up to the vaccine specifically. So in order to create a vaccine, you have to have a good understanding of the bacteria or bacillus. So here's how typhoid fever works first. It enters the body through the fecal-oral route.
Ew.
Yes, eat that poop, girl.
Ew.
Humans are disgusting, as we know. And they use the bathroom and don't wash their hands. And especially like hygiene was not a thing for
yeah.
so long. So people, you know, it was easy for it to spread because they would go to the bathroom, not wash their
yeah.
hands, eat something somewhere else. Someone went to the bathroom who had typhoid fever
yeah.
because typhoid lines the intestines. And so it gets caught in the poop that you excrete.
Ugh, God.
Yeah, I know. Just,
all I can
we
think
it.
Of is there's this movie that had a clip that was like, it was a woman talking to her kid. She was like, is that chocolate or poop? Is it chocolate or poop? And then she tastes it and goes, it's chocolate. And another character was like, what if that had been poop?
What movie?
I don't remember. It's older. I don't
Ugh.
Remember. But
ew. That is literally typhoid.
Yeah.
Ooh, she probably got typhoid. It was poop. People didn't, however, know all this right away. This is how it happens, but I have to explain that so you can understand how it led up. In the late 1800s, Karl Liebermeister, who was a German internist, which I'd never heard of before, but it's someone who specializes in diagnosing and preventing internal diseases.
Makes sense.
Internist. Yes. he assumed that typhoid fever, because they knew it existed, came from an unknown microorganism, which is true. And he also tried to prove that when you drink water contaminated with feces, that it spread the disease, which is also true. So he was already kind of in the right.
He had a hunch. He was right.
He had a hunch. In 1873, William Budd, who was a Bristol doctor, actually proved the theory that Carl had laid out and demonstrated that fecal matter could spread the disease.
I can't with the number of times you have already said fecal.
Oh, there's more, baby. I know. Why did I just say poop? Fecal. I think fecal is grosser. More gross.
I don't ever. It's all gross.
It's all gross.
This
okay.
whole episode. If you're eating or snacking right now, stop. Put it away.
Oh, that's right. Brianna told me a tiny little bit about hers, and it
Mine
is disgusting.
Is also disgusting. So
get ready.
Please don't eat anything during this episode.
So stay listening. Stay tuned. Also, we have to understand, besides the hygiene, that we are very lucky to have treated water now, but they didn't for the longest time. I think, oh yeah, the first water treatment plant was built in Scotland in 1804.
Wow.
And so, and this was like the base water treatment plant. So if that was 1804, you can only imagine how long that took to kind of them to update it and make it better and spread across the world.
Right.
And also how before that, how things could just spread.
Right. Well, that's why, like, in third world countries where typhoid still exists, they don't have water treatment. So it all checks
exactly,
out.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It was in 1879 that Carl Eberth discovered the bacillus actually responsible for it. And he discovered it in the abdominal lymph nodes. And today it is called Salmonella typhi. The Salmonella.
The reveal.
It is. I know the reveal. The reveal. It is a branch of Salmonella, actually.
Wow.
The thing that makes it kind of different from other Salmonella is that you can get it from the meat of animals. I read this, so, but, and it's kind of weird to me to think about, but the way that typhoid fever can spread is really only through, like, excrement.
Yeah.
And not through eating the meat of another animal.
Right, because that's like normal salmonella you get from like uncooked chicken or whatever.
Yeah.
But okay.
But this
I
is
see.
Specifically in fecal matter.
Poop.
More poop. Yep. Interesting. Okay. Vaccine. People are dying.
Yep.
Let's get a vaccine because this, like I said, 10 to 30% of untreated people, we also didn't have antibiotics yet.
Yeah.
So if you get typhoid, you're basically like high chance of death or at least like really bad, you know, symptoms.
You're fooped.
Yeah. And what'd you say?
Fooped.
Yes, fooped. So there was a strong need for a vaccine, obviously, because it seemed like a few people were working on it at the same time. So everyone was kind of trying to find it. One of those guys was Almroth Edward Wright. He was a British bacteriologist, and he was working on it in 1896. And it was used for military aid because, if we remember, the war was a huge spread of typhoid fever, especially if you're going to other countries and hopping around, you know. So he was, they were interested in using it for the British military at the time. At the same time, another person, Richard Pfeiffer, was a German pathologist, and he was working on creating a vaccine. There's some debate on who did it first, but the publication that I read, or one of the publications, was that it was most likely that they did it at the same time.
Yeah.
Because lots of people were trying
to...
Twinsies. Trying to get the vaccine. And it wasn't just them. They were just kind of leaders in it. Some of these were like teams of people.
Yeah.
Or they worked under a mentor on it, but they really discovered it. Either way, there was a success in the use of a heat-killed typhoid bacillus in the vaccine.
Oh, wow.
So if we remember way back from the types of vaccines, this is the inactivated vaccine that was being created at this time. Due to this vaccine and improved sanitation efforts finally coming about, including cleaning drinking water with chlorine, actually.
Okay.
Which I'm not sure if they do that today. I should have looked that up.
I don't know.
in pools.
And yeah, but you're not supposed to drink the pool water.
Nope. The disease declined in the 20th century in Western countries, to be clear. It was, however, still very present in South and East Asia, Africa, South America, and the Caribbean.
Okay.
One of the vaccines was more powerful than the other and worked better, but had worse side effects, so it fell out of use.
Yeah. Interesting. But it worked better.
But it worked better.
But it was just... It just sucked.
Because it had a stronger strand of the virus.
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense as to why it had stronger side effects.
Yes.
Interesting.
Okay. Interesting. Just one of those things.
I can't really tell what I would rather have. More effective or worse side effects, you know? It's like a catch-22.
It's the same thing. More effective and worse side effects.
Yes. That's what I mean. Anyway, never mind.
Oh, you said or, so I was just clarifying to the people.
I don't speak English.
I'm sorry. Hopefully you're all following me. There's a lot going on here. There were then, as noted in a medical journal published in 2012, multi-drug resistant Salmonella typhi throughout the 20th century. Oh. So we needed updated vaccines.
Right.
Because we had one of them that was going out of use and the other one that wasn't as powerful. And then you're getting these sneaky little salmonellas coming up and being like, you know.
Sneaky salmonella.
They thought they created this vaccine and we're like, okay, we're good now.
Right.
But salmonella was like, no, you keep getting typhoid through poop.
Not today, sis.
Not today, sis. Eat that poop-filled water and I'll kill you.
Oh, God.
Due to the previous work by Felix A. Krikorian in 1986, scientists at the National Institute of Health created a new injectable subunit vaccine. If you remember, a subunit vaccine is using part of the virus instead of the whole. Mm-hmm. And what they used is the part of the virus that was the more effective virus. So this was going to be a good one. And it's still used to this day, this vaccine. And it's called V-capsular polysaccharide of S. enterica var typhi.
Golf claps.
That was
that.
Completely that was... incorrect, I'm sure. But whatever.
No, nobody knows. It was perfect.
Yeah. I just have to say it because I feel like every time they said that. And so I just want other people to know this is exactly what it was called.
Right.
The thing it is sold as now is Typhim V.
Okay.
Is the brand name.
Cool.
Love that. It was found to have a higher success rate as those before it, coming in around 55 to 75% effective.
Okay.
So pretty good.
Not too bad.
Not too bad, right? After, you know, all that research. The vaccine contained part of the more successful vaccine that we talked about earlier.
Okay.
Actually, they had taken that and reworked it.
Yeah.
After this, there was a need for more successful commercial vaccine, and they had known that live attenuated vaccines were more powerful at the time and had higher success rates because it elicits more of an immune response. In the late 80s, there was a trial of TY21A is the name of this vaccine.
Ah, yes. Know it well.
You know it well? Actually, I know it well because I took this vaccine 2 years ago.
You did?
Yep. TY21A. Oh, wow. It's an oral vaccine, so it's like pills, yeah.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. And
because you were going to China.
So I was going to China.
Oh.
It is only, I think they have recommendations on the CDC of when you're traveling places.
Mm-hmm.
The typhoid vaccine is in the moderate recommendation, and it's only if you're visiting family members or rural areas.
Yeah.
I think I just took it, even though, because I was only going to cities. I mean, it was a privileged tour. I feel like I just took it anyway because I was just in case kind of thing. Like, worst comes to worst, you know?
I would do that.
And it's so interesting, too, because here I am thinking, people are like, oh, my God, don't drink the water in China. And I'm thinking they're racist.
It's because of typhoid.
But it's actually when you go there, they say, don't drink the water.
Oh, my gosh.
Unless it's been boiled.
Well,
or you're in a ritzy hotel or something. Yeah.
You're full of microchips now. So then,
I am.
Your fault for taking that vaccine.
I wonder if it's in their rhetoric, though, that those microchips only get injected. So maybe I'm not full of microchips.
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay, Karen.
Chips and pills. Anyways.
Chips and pills. Now, this vaccine actually has a success rate of 67 to 96% in trials. Yeah. So much better.
Yeah.
Still in use today as well. This vaccine is sold as Vivotif by Byrna Biotech.
Okay.
Vivotif
Not sounds
useful
like a perfume.
For us.
Is that okay?
I hope so. Smells good and kills typhoid.
Right.
Sadly, this vaccine won't provide protection for those ages 2 to 6.
Okay.
Which are very vulnerable yeah. to typhoid. That's
Damn
why they're
I can't
still.
I can't get it. I'm only 6.
You're only you're okay. almost there. You're almost there.
I'm so close. Anyways.
And so that's why there's still so many cases nowadays, because they're trying to work out these things. I'm going to talk to you about a couple that they try to make.
Do it.
Recently, in the 2000s, there was a conjugate vaccine which worked in 90% of trials in 2 to 5. Conjugate, those sneaky little sugar, if we remember, sugar viruses.
Yeah.
That's how that one works.
Virus in disguise.
Virus in disguise for those young little babes. they made a conjugate vaccine, and it had huge success, as I just said. And it was approved in 2017 by WHO for children 6 months and older.
Mm-hmm.
So just a few years ago, which is kind of crazy to think yeah. about how vaccines are still being made for typhoid
right.
so recently.
Right.
But for a vulnerable, harder to create for population.
Right.
And they are always having a problem with kids, but they still don't have one for under 6 months.
Okay.
So babies can still die from typhoid. Anyway, if you really want to know more about this, I've attached like 10 articles and some of them are really sciencey and some of them are like, actually, I labeled one as, if you ever want to read one, it's this one, because it's pretty interesting
it's
when
one.
It lays out like it yeah. in order. So you can read that one if you want. But other than that, even though these vaccines are efficacious, to use that word again, there is still a need for a better vaccine for these stronger strains of typhoid.
Wow.
Yeah, that's typhoid.
That's that.
I got nothing.
Wow.
I was going to talk about Typhoid Mary.
Oh,
but Typhoid Mary is just the most iconic.
Yeah. Carrier?
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Asymptomatic carrier?
Asymptomatic, thanks, Bree. Yeah. Asymptomatic carrier. And she, you know, is like, that's why she's so famous, is because at all that happened with her. And also there was a lot of ethics because she was kept on like an island
yeah.
for like 27 months or
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
And so there's a whole bunch right. of drama with it. But I'm not going to talk about it because it has nothing to do with the vaccine. It's just a very interesting story. So I'm going to send you over to Drunk History after you listen to this podcast. You still have to listen to Brie. and Drunk History has such a great episode on Typhoid Mary.
Drunk History is one of my favorite TV shows in general. But that particular episode is truly so good. It is a chef's kiss of an episode.
It's because the doctor's lip syncing is unclockable.
Yeah.
It is so clear. Yeah. He should be on Drag Race.
He should. Well, thank you, Joshua.
Yeah.
I will go watch that episode again because I love it.
There's your daily dose of typhoid.
All right, Joshua. Are you ready to learn a little bit about smallpox?
I am. Give me a
smallpox
new disease.
Is what I'm doing. Oh, it's not a new disease at all. But, but I'll tell you about it. So we're going to start with the segment that I have titled "Ew, Gross," because it's all about the symptoms of smallpox.
Ooh, yum.
They kind of come in stages, as several serious diseases do, but your first symptoms are going to include a high fever, fatigue, headache, and a backache, which was surprising to me. And then roughly 2 to 3 days later, a flat red rash appears. It usually started on the face and the upper arms, and then it would spread all over your body. Over the next 2 to 3 weeks, the spots became firm, dome-shaped, and filled with my least favorite word on planet Earth, which is pus. I hate it. After that, they scab over, and then scabs fall off 3 to 4 weeks after the rash first appears, and they leave, like, deep pitted scars a lot of the time. So this is a disease that takes weeks to progress and then weeks to get over.
Oh, my God.
It's awful.
I didn't realize how long it was.
It's a long process. So most survivors have some degree of permanent scarring, which could range from kind of mild to really severe. Other severe permanent damage could include losing your lips, nose, or ear tissue, because they're all like mostly made out of cartilage, and I guess that's highly affected by these rashes. Blindness could also occur as a result of scarring on your cornea. Like your eyes could get infected and scarred.
That
like
kind of makes sense, but geez.
Yeah, put your snack down. It's real gross. So the incubation period for smallpox is around 12 days, but symptoms can develop as soon as 7 days after being exposed or as long as 19 days after exposure. So you could be walking around carrying this thing for almost a month before getting any symptoms and spreading it to every person you come in contact with. Because that is exactly how it's spread. It is spread the same way that COVID is, through the air. It can pass from one person to another through coughing, sneezing, or breathing, or by contact with the scabs or the fluid from the blisters.
That's so interesting. I only thought it was by physical contact. No. I didn't know it was in the air.
Yeah, it's in the air. It can also spread from personal items and bedding, which there's like a little sort of myth about later. It's not really a myth, but we'll get into it. Smallpox is most contagious during the first week that you are carrying it, even if you don't have symptoms. As more scabs form, the person becomes less and less contagious. So by the time your last scab falls off, you're contagious all the way up until you have no more scabs.
Wow.
Yeah. And roughly 30% of smallpox cases would result in death while it was still active. So it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. Pretty bad time. So some general smallpox info outside of the symptoms before we get into the vaccine is that evidence can be traced all the way back to the 3rd century in Egypt that smallpox existed because 3 mummies were found with traces of smallpox-like rashes. The next written evidence that we have of smallpox occurs in China in the 4th century. And the disease started spreading globally from there due to, you know, like increased exploration, wider trade routes, expanding civilizations, yada, yada, yada. All of the things that connect people to each other also connect diseases around the world.
Pandemic.
Pandemic, exactly.
Smallpox is winning.
Yep. If you caught smallpox and survived it, you then had immunity to the disease, which is at least one good thing. Now, by the Middle Ages, the Chinese had invented a method of obtaining immunity. It was not a vaccine, but it was still effective. I'm going to tell you about it, and it's really gross. So they collected dried scabs from mildly infected people.
No.
They ground them into a powder, rolled that powder into cotton, packed it all into a pipe, and then they either puffed that mixture into an uninfected person's nose or that person snorted the powder.
Brianna, shut up right now. Why would you share this?
Because this was like the beginnings of vaccinations. It is not technically a vaccine, but it's something that they would call insufflation, and it's the first documented case of inoculation.
So oh, there's ever.
Like, yeah.
Ooh.
So there's like a progression, right? We go from insufflation to inoculation to the name changes once it gets to Europe in the 1700s to variolation. And then variolation becomes vaccine. I think that's the progression.
Ooh. The so, etymology?
The etymology of the word. So roughly 500,000 people died annually all the way up until the 18th century from smallpox. Yeah. So now we're in the 18th century. We're in the 1700s.
Nice. Thank you.
Smallpox. You're welcome. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's horrible here.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. Smallpox is everywhere. It's a horrible, gross disease, as we discussed, that many people get and many people die from. However, humans are not the only ones to suffer from a pox. There's a pox upon your home. There's a pox upon your horse. There's a pox upon your rabbit.
Cow.
And most importantly, upon your cow. This is like a real, you just said cow is a joke, but the cow pox is truly the most important pox of all. And I will explain why.
I was just quoting Mulan.
No, but yeah, a pox upon your cow. It is appropriately called cowpox.
What?
It's extremely important in relation to smallpox. Now, a man named Dr. Edward Jenner was a physician during the late 18th century. He knew about variolation because he had been variolated or inoculated, whatever you want to call it. It's pretty much the same thing. When he was 8 years old, he got inoculated.
Okay.
So he knows about it, right? He's been there, done that.
Yeah. Old news.
Old news. He also knew that cows suffered from cowpox, which has a super similar DNA structure to smallpox. Cowpox, though, is a lot milder than smallpox is, but it still presents similar symptoms. So the cows would get kind of like covered in blisters, but it wouldn't be nearly as bad as when humans got smallpox.
So they didn't know that that was like a similar thing yet.
They didn't know. Most people didn't know from like a DNA structural standpoint that they were really similar. But Dr. Jenner actually noticed that milkmaids, because humans could contract cowpox from cows. So he noticed that milkmaids who had contracted the disease on their hands seemed to be immune to getting smallpox. He just like noticed it. He kind of connected the dots that these women are getting a disease that is similar to smallpox but presents in animals. And then once smallpox comes around, they don't get it.
That sounds familiar.
It does. So the year is 1796 when he notices this, just so that you have a little historical context. He decides to do something about it. He decides to have some sort of experiment go on. So he contacts his milkmaid friend with cowpox. She is a young woman named Sarah Nelms. He takes a sample of pus, again, disgusting, from Sarah's pox sores. And instead of testing it out on himself, he decides to inject that into an 8-year-old child named James Phipps. Also, we have the name of the cow, which was Blossom. It's not important to the story at all, but I thought I would share it with you.
Good for you, Blossom.
The cow's name is Blossom.
Blossom, so, curing children.
Curing children, left, right, and center. Now, about a month and a half after Jenner inoculated James with cowpox, he inoculates him again, and this time it was with a small amount of pus from a smallpox sore. James showed no sign of infection whatsoever from smallpox, thus proving that Jenner's new method of inoculation, while extremely unethical because he just like randomly did it on a child to test this out.
And also injected pus.
Yes. It did work, though. He was right. It worked. Unethical, but correct, I guess.
Oh, no.
So Dr. Jenner comes up with the scientific name for cowpox, calling it variola vaccina from the Latin word vacca, which means cow. He calls his new process vaccination. So the smallpox vaccine was the very first, like, official vaccination ever.
Wow.
Yeah. In 1801, Jenner published a work titled On the Origin of the Vaccine Inoculation, where he detailed his discoveries and said that, quote, "The annihilation of the smallpox, the most dreadful scourge of the human species, must be final result of this practice." Basically, he's just saying everybody has to do this so that we can get rid of smallpox entirely because it's the worst thing that happens to humans.
Herd immunity.
So vaccination became widely accepted and gradually replaced the practice of variolation. Scientists would use Jenner's model for vaccinations throughout the 19th and 20th centuries, which leads to new discoveries of a new vaccine for countless diseases. And then I wrote a joke from hep A to hep B, but it doesn't really make sense.
Not hep A to hep B.
I know. Well, okay, so his vaccine does hold, like, origins for the vaccine to hepatitis B, but not hepatitis A. So I was just being stupid, but
I love it.
So the vaccine changes a little bit over time. Obviously, as modern science improves, we can't continue using the pus from animals, but I'll explain to you a little bit of the transition there. It's a little murky. I looked at, like, a bunch of different websites and scientific journals, and nobody really knows exactly when the shift happened. But I'll tell you as much as I could find out. So Jenner's vaccine became widely popular, and by 1813, it was widely accessible throughout Europe, Asia, and the Americas. Now, as time went on, they needed more vaccine material, and which, if you remember, the vaccine material is pus from animal sores.
Oh, I remember.
Yep. It's disgusting and awful. So as time went on, the animals that they would collect from differed because there's, I think there's like a type of pox that almost every animal gets. So what I said earlier was kind of a joke, but your chicken can have chicken pox. That was not on purpose. I got it.
Not your chicken can have, you know, chicken pox.
Not on purpose at all. Anyways, your cow has cowpox, your rabbit has rabbit pox, I don't know. So they used different animals for the same effect, but health codes got stricter and the vaccine naturally evolved. Now, up until this point, it had been propagated mostly from cows and rabbits, actually. But that, because they were using different animals, they were actually introducing several different related viruses into the same pool. So with all of this mixing, eventually the virus used for smallpox vaccinations was no longer actually cowpox, but was instead something that they called vaccinia virus, which is really closely related to cowpox, but it had, like, mutated over time to be kind of a different disease.
That checks out.
Yeah.
The virus, you know, it's changing, it's growing.
It's growing. So as science progressed, the smallpox vaccine shifted from animal sources to being produced by modern cell culture techniques. So it just started being created in a lab. Newer smallpox vaccines used the same strain of smallpox, but it was manufactured in a lab, which I just said. As we get further into the 20th century, the smallpox vaccine became even more specifically developed for even safer vaccinations. So this whole time, they're kind of using the same strain, but they're just tweaking it to make it better and better and more effective. And in 1961, the bifurcated needle was developed as a better and more cost-effective form of vaccinating. It became the go-to method used during the eradication campaign, which happened between 1966 and 1977. The bifurcated needle vaccination used only 1/4 the amount of vaccine that had been needed through other methods, and it was easier to perform. So I kind of just touched on this really lightly just now, but as the vaccine was proved to be really effective and traveled around all these different countries, a global goal was getting every country vaccinated and getting the disease eradicated globally. So there was a really big movement within the 60s and 70s to travel all around the world and get smaller third world countries vaccinated so that they could get rid of the disease entirely.
Was this by WHO?
I think it was spearheaded by WHO. But they had to have like countries participate. So they would send out doctors and stuff from other countries. But I think it was led by WHO. So I'm going to tell you the story of the very last person in the world to have naturally acquired smallpox.
Oh, my. The drama.
I know. This is just pulled straight from the CDC website. So everything that I'm saying is straight from them.
Ooh, quote.
Yeah. So in late 1975, Rahima Banu, a 3-year-old girl from Bangladesh, was the last person in the world to have naturally acquired variola major, which is smallpox, and the last person in Asia to have active smallpox. She was isolated at home with house guards posted 24 hours a day until she was no longer infectious. A house-to-house vaccination campaign within a 1.5-mile radius of her home began immediately, and every house, public meeting area, school, and healer within 5 miles was visited by a member of the smallpox eradication program team to ensure the illness did not spread. A reward was also offered to anyone for reporting a smallpox case. So through the establishment of international vaccination programs, smallpox has been largely eliminated worldwide and would officially be declared eradicated by WHO on May 8th, 1980.
Wow.
So as far as we know, there are no more cases of smallpox anywhere in the world.
Just you wait, sis. 2021 is going to bring smallpox back.
Well, after eradicating, remaining vaccines were mostly destroyed. So if that's the case, we're in trouble. However, there does remain a need for the vaccination to be stockpiled in case of something
just in case,
a resurgence. So there's a stockpile of the vaccine held by WHO headquarters in Switzerland, as well as stockpiles located in France, Germany, Japan, New Zealand, and Atlanta, Georgia in the United States.
Nicole Page Brooks is, you know, holding all the vaccines.
Holding all of them. Yeah. So, you know, if you're interested in starting some biological warfare, just head on down to Georgia.
Stop, Brianna. Don't give him ideas.
I'm just kidding. You know what? It wouldn't work anyways, because in July of 2018, the FDA approved the first drug to treat smallpox. After all that time, it took until 2018 to create a drug to treat it instead of like...
antibiotics?
I'm actually not sure what the drug is, but it exists. Until then, they didn't have a cure for it. They just had a vaccine. So if you got it, you kind of just had to ride it out. But they discovered a drug to treat smallpox. So.
I mean, there's so many of those that are happening right now where we still like either don't have a cure or we're still working very hard to get a cure.
I know. We know that there are a lot of people out there who are against vaccinations.
What?
Even though we have this long history of them being incredibly effective and we completely eradicated a disease from the face of Earth due to vaccines, but it's fine. I'm going to tell you a little bit about some people's objections to vaccines.
I am very curious to know.
So obviously there are religious reasons against deliberate infection. I guess somewhere in the Bible, Jesus was like, thou shalt not make yourself sick. I don't know.
But,
did
he say that?
No, I don't know.
I'm gonna look
that up. I don't know. But apparently there are religious reasons against it. people object to the use of animal materials in vaccines, whether that's because they think it's unsanitary or they think that it harms the animals in one way or another. As we talked about with smallpox, it was just taking pus from already existing sores. So that didn't hurt the animal, but...
I know, especially like if unsanitary, that yeah. makes no sense to me because you want to risk the disease for your little
exactly,
unsanitariness.
Exactly. People also believe that vaccines could transmit other diseases, whether that's due to the animal byproducts in vaccines or just that they're being injected with something in general because people don't understand how it works.
Yeah.
I'll read you this quote that I have. I've paraphrased it, but Dr. Josepha Steinhauer sort of shed some light on why people might not want to get vaccinated right now. And the gist of what she said is that we as a modern society have never experienced the after effects and horrors of such a serious disease like smallpox or measles or mumps or rubella, things like that, that we have these mandatory vaccines for. And sometimes the fear of immediate side effects from a vaccine outweighs the fear of the disease itself. That's proven in things like people have like mumps parties sometimes, people who do not believe in vaccines.
Yes.
Yeah, there'll be like one child who comes down with something like mumps or measles and the
bring all the kids
the
over.
Parents in that group, yeah, are like, oh, bring your kids over and purposefully expose them to this disease so that they can get it when they're a baby. They forget about it and then they're fine and they're immune and they won't get it again. That has been proven that it doesn't really work. Actually, I didn't write this down, but I do know that Mark Twain at one point purposefully exposed himself to a friend with, I believe it was measles, and he almost died. He didn't. He stayed alive, but he like really was very close to death because he had that thought of like, oh, I'll just expose myself on purpose. But it has been proven that doing that results in a higher risk of worse symptoms and potentially death than a vaccine with mild symptoms would.
As we talked about earlier.
Yes, exactly. So that's some of the reason. And then there's also just tensions over mandatory vaccines and personal liberties. So people get really tied up in like, well, it's my body, my choice, right? And so they don't want to get vaccinated. But when it's for the goal of the overall health of, you know, the general population, there's a little bit of a difference in morality for where that stands.
You mean like people who don't even wear a mask?
Yes, exactly. They are, I'm assuming, the same people who do not wear masks out in public because it's their rights and their rights are being infringed upon, you know, damn the person who dies because you refuse to put a piece of cloth over your face or get vaccinated. So,
and I just don't understand. These same people, these anti-vaxxers, they're like, don't listen to the media. Mm-hmm. Here are all the things wrong with the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And then they share those like, you know, strong rhetoric photos of here's how many vaccines goes in your baby. And it's like a baby doll with right. like 100 needles in it.
Oh my God.
And it's like, one, they don't get that many vaccinations. Two, of course it's going to look like
right.
that when you put
it's
them all in at
shock
once.
Value.
Yeah, it's shock
I
value.
Mean, it's the people who have not done the actual research behind the process. And hopefully, if you are somehow listening to this podcast and you don't believe in vaccines, hearing all of this has... helped you realize what's actually in them and that it is safe and you should take it. So.
Yeah, and just, yeah, do yeah. the research. If you feel strongly anti-vax, mm-hmm. you know, just do the research
right.
because, you know, you'll know throughout right. history and just in general
yeah.
that vaccines are the same thing that you are doing, but
right.
better.
Right. Well, and Josh and I have both linked a ton of websites and articles that have incredibly good, accurate information. So if you'd like to make it easier on yourself to do more research, just go to our show notes and click any of the links that you're interested in.
Yeah. I also tagged the CDC's How Vaccine Works
yep.
article. It's
mm-hmm.
like just two pages. It's super easy.
Yeah.
And you can just be like, oh, yes, this is, yeah, this makes sense.
Yeah. So to close us off, I have a couple fun facts. We love fun facts.
I have to say that every single time.
We do. So famous smallpox survivors include Abraham Lincoln, Elizabeth I, Queen of England, Stalin, Andrew Jackson, George Washington, Mozart, Beethoven, and Mary Shelley. Now, famous people who have died from smallpox. I only wrote two. I wrote Pocahontas and Louis XV of France, apparently.
I mean, Pocahontas, man.
Pocahontas.
Justice for Pocahontas,
justice
okay?
Justice for Pocahontas.
You know, interesting. I have a weird fun fact.
Do you?
But Lincoln's third son got typhoid.
Really?
Yeah, I read that somewhere. So when you said Lincoln had smallpox, I was like, I know another Lincoln.
Contracting all the diseases.
It was a time.
It was a time. It really was a time.
It was a time.
Yeah, there were a lot of different rulers who died from smallpox, so many that I did not continue to write anyone down. Also, this is kind of sad, but Ben Franklin at one point had spoken out about how he was unsure about variolation. This was before the vaccine existed. It was like the earlier 1700s.
So he actually had right to question.
I mean, it had already been proven that it did work.
It was
effective. But he had his doubts about it. And then later, his son died of smallpox. And he released a statement afterwards saying that he deeply regretted not variolating the two of them because he ended up losing his son.
If that ain't an I told you so.
Yeah, I know. That's pretty depressing. Smallpox is thought to be responsible for the demise of the Aztec and the Incan empires. I didn't find a whole lot about that, but people think that could have been the case, is that everyone died out from a really horrible outbreak of smallpox.
Maybe that'll be us in COVID.
Maybe.
The future aliens at touchdown will be like, wow, there used to be a civilization here.
We'll see, I guess. And the last fun fact that I have for you is that a TV show that I enjoy very much called Outlander used the smallpox vaccine as a plot point in season one. These two women are being tried as witches, and one of them tries to, save the other one by, pulling down the sleeve of her dress and showing her scar from her smallpox vaccination. Because that's something that I actually forgot to mention, is that when you were vaccinated for a while, it would leave a slightly dimpled scar in your arm. It was circular most of the time. So she pulled down the sleeve of her dress and was like, look, I have the devil's mark. It's not her, it's me. And she was trying to show them that she was the witch and to leave this other character alone. But it's actually, she only had the smallpox vaccination because she was also from the future and Outlander is about time travel. So there's a whole plot point in there that I didn't want to spoil in case nobody's watched Outlander. So Claire, the main character, was like, wait, she's also from the future. But everyone in the room was like, that's the mark of the devil, killer. So,
I didn't realize what time we were in.
Yeah. Sorry. I did not clarify that. I kind of just assumed everyone knew what I was talking about.
For those of you that do, great.
Oh my God.
And those of you that don't,
good luck.
Hope you forget
Watch
about
Outlander.
It.
Watch Outlander. Season one is on Netflix.
Promotion. Well, thank you, Bree.
You're welcome.
For telling me about your pus. And thank you all so much for listening. If you have any theme suggestions for us, send them over to thingamabobpodcast@gmail.com or slide into our DMs on our new and improved Instagram, Ooh. Thingamabob Podcast, okay? We've grown up from Thingamabob Pod. We're adults.
A full word now.
We're a full, full word. Or you can go to Twitter at Thingamabob Pod there because we are still Thingamabob Pod. While you're there, give us a follow and please subscribe to our show on Apple Music, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen. Please leave us a review, too. It really helps so much. We've actually gotten a few reviews, recently in the new year. And so I just want to take this moment to thank you,
yes.
for whoever
oh my God.
Left us reviews, because
if
that
you're reviewing
matters.
Us, for real, thank you so much. That is, one of the most important things for getting people to actually see new and up-and-coming podcasts, is if it has reviews and stars. So thank you if you've already done it. If you haven't, please do.
And also it just makes us, feel good.
It makes us feel good. Tell
and
us
lets
nice
us know,
things.
It's always good to get a review because, then if, you're doing something right.
Right.
make sure to join us next week where Bree becomes the Mario to my Luigi and we talk about video games.
And thank you for joining us because now we are all two things smarter.
Thingamabob!